wait. It's annoying. But before we start, I would like Andy to talk a little bit about our plans to
have joined the conference.
Our terms and conditions for the use of the IFRS taxonomy. Andy?
Okay, I hope that most people now join the conference call. This is just a quick note to let you...
Have left the conference.
This is just a quick note to let you know that we've
been... Have left the conference.
...working on...
There must be some problem.
Hi, Lam, EY.
Have joined the conference.
Sorry, there's a lot of people joining and leaving the conference at the moment. Is anybody having line problems?
There's this constant sonar sound going on.
I'm a back. Have left the conference.
I'm getting the same thing.
Yeah.
Uto again.
I'm here.
Have joined the conference.
Yes, it's on 10 minutes from Paris.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people leaving.
Do you have an option for the overall mute, just to mute everybody when you are guys speaking? Maybe the sound is lower.
Yeah, it was star six to mute your own line. We can mute everyone, I think, with star seven, but...
Yeah, I'm muting myself, but people joining and going out are just the messages, so we cannot hear you at all. So if there's an overall mute, that would be helpful.
The beep stopped.
Come back.
Yeah, the beep stopped.
Have joined the conference.
Okay, the beep stopped, and at least one
William
has joined the conference.
And I think that's now everybody who had left the conference rejoined. So I'll give it a minute just to see if we get some rough quiet, because the beep has stopped. A few seconds. Okay, I think I'm going to hope that is stable. So, as I was saying, this is just a quick note to let you know that we've been doing some work on the IFRS taxonomy terms and conditions to update them and make them more relevant to the way that taxonomy is used at the moment. This is part of some overall work going on in the building to look at the terms and conditions for use for and the IP owned by the IFRS Foundation. So what we've got at the moment is we're working on a draft of some new terms and conditions, and as soon as we've got a near final draft of those, we'll be sending them out to you for review. Basically, what we'd love you to do is have a look through and make sure that we haven't introduced any clauses that you think will cause too many of our regulators major problems or unexpected problems. Obviously, there's some things we're aiming to introduce into those terms and conditions to try and just make them more clear, make it more obvious what it is that we want to be able to control with terms and conditions and what it is that we don't need to control. But we also would like feedback from any regulators on the ITCG, but also anybody else, if you could let us know if there's anything in there that you think will be seen as unreasonable, or if you think will cause you major problems in your filing system. So, you should be getting those sometime towards the end of February, and we'll send you out an email and we'll put them up on the SharePoint.
Olivier Coste, ESMA.
Has left the conference.
Okay, I suggest we continue and we talk later to our IT to see if we can make this work better next time. Michelle, would you like to start?
I will. So the first point on the agenda, well, second now, is about the disclosure initiative publication that the ESB published recently in December last year. And it is an exposure draft of amendments to IS7. The comment period ends until 17th of April. And you have asked us during one of the previous calls that we did some additional information for you, or presented some additional information for you about those amendments, about the taxonomy for those amendments. So I'll just say at the beginning that those amendments in general, they're related to two things. One is the reconciliation of amounts in the statement of financial position for which cash flows are classified as financing activities. And the other thing is the additional information about liquidity and some restrictions on cash and cash equivalents. Before we get to the taxonomy part for this exposure draft, we've asked Michelle from our disclosure initiative team, not from the taxonomy part, but from our disclosure initiative team in general, to give us some more, or you some more details
Joined the conference.
About the development of the exposure draft.
Not recorded.
How it was developed, why it was developed, what were the what was the process. So I hand over to Michelle for her slides, and then I'll be back with the taxonomy part. Michelle?
Okay. So thank you for inviting us along. As Bartek said, we're from the technical team looking and part of the disclosure initiative. So this project is part of the wider disclosure initiative, and it's looking at amendments to IS7. Overall, the disclosure initiative is looking at the effectiveness of disclosures and improving the disclosures. So this amendment arises from one of the requests that we've heard over a number of years to improve disclosures about debt. So on slide 5, we've set out some of the background that we had that goes back really to 2009, where we started to get feedback as part of the financial statements project that was then ongoing. That users were looking for more information, and particularly they were requesting a net debt reconciliation. We got the same feedback in the agenda consultation in 2011, and then again at the discussion forum in 2013. So in October 2013, we started discussing with the ISB and some of our advisory bodies how we could approach this and whether we could do a narrow scope amendment. We had initial discussions with CMAC, which is our Capital Advisory Committee. So that's our user group that about what information they were really requesting and what was the important issues for them. We took a paper to the ISB in late 2013, and what the ISB asked us to do was, following the feedback that it had received from the users, was to really try and understand what it was that investors were requesting and how they would use the information that they were requesting. So in early 2014, we undertook a survey that was designed just to seek the views of users on what information they needed about debt and how they would use that information. And from that, we were really able to identify what it was that users used the net debt reconciliation for.
Have joined the conference.
And the feedback we got was that investors liked the net debt reconciliation because it enabled them to verify their understanding of cash flows, because there was a link between the opening balance sheet, the cash flow statement, and the closing balance sheet. They saw this as a very useful verification tool. Because it was a verification tool, when they came to forecasting future cash flows, they had more confidence in what they were forecasting, and they also could see more clearly the sources of an entity's financing, its debt arrangements, and how those sources had been applied over time. And because they got that, they were better able, and they found they had more useful information, or they could construct useful information about an entity's financing risk. And I think that survey was probably a bit of an unusual step for us to take on an implementation narrow scope amendment, but it did help us to really have the evidence as to what users used this reconciliation for. So based upon that, the feedback we received, we went back to the ISB in March 2014 and proposed that we would do a reconciliation as the users were requesting. We made some proposals to the board in March, and then the board suggested that we drew up some illustrative examples, and we made sure that that this would give the users the information they provided, and that the preparers would be able to provide the information. So we took a number of illustrative examples, including extending the illustrative example that is already in IS7 back to the GPF and CMAC group in June 2014. And we got pretty good feedback actually that the illustrations would provide the users with the information they need. It would give them sufficient information to do their analysis, and preparers on the whole were, the GPF was satisfied. But we did get some feedback about people wanting to understand cash and cash equivalents. So they wanted a bit more information about the availability of that cash. So over the summer, we did some further outreach with the global preparers, really following up some of the comments. And we got some very constructive feedback from global preparers that really they understood investors' views about needing to understand this. And in September, we took those proposals back to the ISB and got agreement that we could start drafting the exposure draft. So, although we'd started out looking investors' requests for a net debt reconciliation, where we've ended up with it in the exposure draft is that we're going to try and improve information to users about an entity's financing activities. So that will give them a gross reconciliation of debt. And also, we're also going to try and provide some of that additional information that was requested around cash and cash equivalents. So those are the two objectives that are set out on the slide. I think they do really provide the information that was originally requested. Although we're not proposing a net debt reconciliation, there is nothing that would stop a preparer extending the gross reconciliation and making it into a net reconciliation in the exposure draft. So if we look at a bit more detail of the content, the first component of the exposure draft is to require the information around an entity's financing activities. So responding to this concern from investors that they didn't get the information about an entity's debt, including the changes in debt during the reporting period. We looked at how we could respond to this. One of the problems, and probably the first problem that we had to overcome, was IFRS doesn't have a definition of debt. So we looked at ways that we could provide this information without having to define debt, because we felt trying to define debt was actually quite a large project and would take a bit longer than the timescale we had in mind for this narrow scope amendment. So what we decided to do was to use the definition of financing activities in the accounting standard on cash flows, so IS7, and to ask for a reconciliation of the items that went through your cash flow statement for financing, but excluding the equity items. And that enabled us to really get a gross reconciliation of debt. I think it gives not a definition of debt, but a framework for what things should be included in the reconciliation.
And that was left the conference.
So on slide 12, we've got what is now required is a reconciliation of the movements, and we've included, as you probably have seen in the exposure draft, an example. The feedback that we got from investors was that they needed to understand the non-cashed changes in debt.
Has joined the conference.
So, fortunately, in the example that's already in IS7, there are two non-cash changes, the new leases and debt that is assumed in an acquisition. But there are, in the exposure draft, we list out a number of other changes, potential changes in debt, like fair value changes. And so that's really the first part of the exposure draft. The second part of the exposure draft was to provide better information about the availability of cash and cash equivalents, and this actually took us quite a lot of work. We spent quite a lot of time looking at disclosures that are already in IFRS and whether these really would require an entity to provide the disclosures. Our analysis was that there was really nothing in IFRS that stopped any entity providing these disclosures, but there was nothing specific enough that where there was a restriction that might affect an entity's decision as to how it used cash within a group, that was provided for. So we came up with a proposal that an entity would disclose information about cash and cash equivalents, where there are restrictions in place that affect the decisions of the entity as to how it uses those balances. So that's a short overview of what the proposals in the ED is. I think Bartek's going to take you through the taxonomy elements of the proposals.
Thank you, Michelle. Before we go into the taxonomy part, are there any questions to Michelle regarding the development of the amendments to IS7? Okay, I don't hear any, so I'll move forward. In terms of the taxonomy for the exposure draft, as you probably have heard a number of times, because we kind of are very public about it, it's the first time that a section on the IFRS taxonomy is actually included in the exposure draft. What you can see in the slide, this is slide 15, is that in the index of contents, you actually have a part that is related to the taxonomy. So it's not a separate document, it's not an additional document, it's something that is actually included in the main exposure draft that is published by the EASB. In terms of the format of the taxonomy part, it's very similar to all our other taxonomy releases that were separate documents. So we hope you are familiar with the structure. Just to tell you some details about this particular structure. For the first part that relates to the reconciliation of those changes in items for which cash flows are financing activities, we imagine or map that as a table, and the members of the table are those items for which the cash flows are financing activities, excluding equity, obviously, as Michel said. The members that we propose to include in the taxonomy are those members that are mentioned in the illustrative example that Michel referred to. So we have only got, except for the default member, we've only got two members. One of them is long-term borrowings, the other is lease liabilities. We haven't added any other, or we haven't proposed for addition any other members. I'll get to questions later on that. In terms of line items, we also use the line items that are in the illustrative example and the line items that are mentioned in the standard. So as Michel said, in addition to those that are actually done for the purpose of the illustrative example, the proposed wording of the amendment names a few others. It says cash flows, which is the main part, but also separately the changes that relate to obtaining or losing control of other entities, and then non-cash changes, and within those non-cash changes we have in the standard the effect of changes from foreign exchange rates and changes in fair values, and then in the illustrative example we have
presentation
this
mode is now enabled.
Should I continue? Yeah. And the last non-cash changes from the illustrative example, and it relates to the lease liabilities. We've also included, as in other documents, a visualization of the table. So here you can see in the same format as you are used to. The members are in the columns, and the line items are in the rows. And this is the exact table that is in the illustrative example to IS7 that is just visualized in taxonomy format, so to say. Finally, to the other part of the disclosure of the exposure draft that relates to restrictions on cash and cash equivalents, we have a general text element that requires the descriptions of those restrictions. And also because tax liabilities are actually mentioned as one potential restriction that might be disclosed by companies, we've produced a monetary element for those tax liabilities. And that's practically it in terms of the taxonomy. So as you can see, the taxonomy, well, the amendment itself and the taxonomy part, this is not a huge impact on the taxonomy. This is one table and a couple of standalone line items. However, very important information in terms of the analysis of financing activities, cash flows and debt. Any questions to the taxonomy part itself, the mapping?
Presentation mode is now disabled.
And I don't hear any again, so I'll just move to the last part, which is the questions that are in the exposure draft. There are four questions that the EASB is asking in the exposure draft. The first two are the questions that relate to the content of the exposure draft itself, so they are not related to the IFRS taxonomy. And obviously, we are asking, whether you think that this is a good disclosure and the need disclosure, and whether it's usable in the format that it's proposed. And the second question is about the transition provisions in terms of how to introduce those amendments to IS 7. The questions that relate to the taxonomy, there are two questions. The first of the questions is again a question that you are used to from all the other documents that we produce, where we basically ask whether the taxonomy is a good mapping of the standard or of the exposure draft in that case. So are the amendments reflected with the sufficient level of details? Should we add or remove any line items or members? Do you like the labels, or do you think that the labels represent the meaning of the elements? In addition to the usual questions, here we ask an additional question that is question 3D, whether you agree with the fact that the elements proposed for inclusion in the IFRS taxonomy are limited only to those that are actually named in IS 7 itself or in the illustrative example to IS 7 as proposed. This is one of the most important questions for us, because the answer to that question may impact the way that the taxonomy is being created of the standards. So whether we are allowed or whether we should put some additional items that are not explicitly mentioned in the text or in the illustrative example. So we encourage you to share your thoughts about that in particular. And as well as the question 4, which is a due process question. So also this is a question that might impact how we are doing things in the future. And this relates to the inclusion of the taxonomy part in the exposure draft itself. So do you agree with the publication of the taxonomy update within the exposure draft as it has been issued here? And then do you find this form and content of the proposed taxonomy update useful? And if not, obviously, what could we do to make it better? So I do encourage you to take a look and answer all four questions, knowing that this is the taxonomy consultative group. I in particular encourage you to answer question 3 and question 4, which relate to the taxonomy. One important thing when submitting a comment letter, you don't have to answer all the questions. So please feel free to either answer question 1 or 1 and 2 if you only want to comment on the content, only question 3 or 4 if you want to only comment on the taxonomy, or all of the questions if you're interested in both sections. So there is no requirement to comment on all 4. You don't need to be stressed about that fact. And finally, in terms of just a reminder from our first slide, the comment letter period ends 17th of April, so you still got about 2 months, slightly more than 2 months to send your comments. Then after the receipt of the comments, the EASB will deliberate those comments, deliberate the whole exposure draft, and then it will probably progress to a final standard, but that also depends obviously on the comments received and on the feedback from the public. And same relates to the taxonomy part, so the future of how we go about the taxonomy in case of new standards or amendments to standards also depends on the feedback we get on questions 3 and 4. So that's it in terms of that part. Any questions to that? Okay. I don't hear any, so again I can only encourage you to comment and we'll move forward.
No, and also I think because this was today was more like an information update requested by the RTCG in December call, so that they would be in a better position to comment on the questions we are asking, the ISB is seeking feedback on.
Yeah, I hope it gave you all the information you needed. However, if not, please do feel free to contact us with content questions. We will refer those questions to Michelle or Gina. In terms of taxonomy questions, we'll try to answer. So if you need any more information that would enable you to comment on the proposals, please do feel free to contact us.
Yeah. And we also have here again the four ISB members present, so I'm sure they're eagerly waiting for your comments as well. Now, we seem, for the next presentation, we seem to have a slight technical problem in the sense that I don't think Grace is on the call, so there seems some kind of connection problem. However, the topic is very important because this is really the aim of this subject today, was to seek for your guidance on the approaches we are going to take for 2015-2016 Common Practice Project. And it's really important because we again want to bring a proposal to the ISB and to the organization. So I'll try to speak on behalf of Grace. Now, I'm not going to go through each of the individual slides because really the purpose again is to seek your feedback. But if you help me control Bartek, yep. The slides. So again, like I said, the aims of the meeting today is really to say, look, we are in the research phase to see what should be the scope of our 2015-2016 Common Practice Project, and we are seeking your guidance. I really want to have a little warning though, at this moment in time, such a project has not been approved yet, or we are not clear yet if the resources will be available to go ahead with such a project. Now, Grace did the investigation and she identified three possible approaches, as you can see that I didn't prepare for this presentation in advance. But the three potential approaches were a general approach, which we very similar to what we did like in at the beginning of the Common Practice Project, where we review the whole set of IFRS financial statements for a sample of companies across the globe. The second approach we have identified as a focused approach, so focused on specific disclosures, focused on new revised standards, or focused on items of post-implementation, or other focus is to continue to focus on activities. A third approach is really to use more external resources and external materials to identify common practice. Now, I think the next slide as why using a general approach again may be useful, I think it's a very little further explanation needed. But again, if there are any questions, let me know. Then, in the next couple of slides, Grace gave some examples of what we consider to be a focused approach. Like, for instance, we could focus on specific disclosures like income taxes or risk management, and see, have a much wider sample, look at it much more in depth. Although we do that when we do an activity-specific project, we may focus at these disclosures as well, but definitely not to the level of that we would do if we were to use a more focused approach. In the next slide, Grace gave some examples of focusing on particular standards, like, for instance, focusing on fair value measurement or focusing on disclosure of interest. And the reason why we said we look at standards effective from the 1st of January 2013, because our last empirical analysis really included a full set of IFRS financial statements up to December 2012. That's why we focused just on the standards effective from that date. A last approach, and I think this is the approach we are quite interested in, is to coordinate our resources together with post-implementation reviews that the ISB normally undertakes. And possible upcoming post-implementation reviews, and I need to note here again that this has not yet approved, such a project has not yet approved by the ISB, and I believe that they're in the process of looking at it, is to look at three post-implementation reviews, IFRS 3, IFRS 12, and IFRS 13. Now, why do we believe that such an approach may be useful? We really believe it may be useful because by us reviewing the disclosures you can see for these standards may identify some areas of concerns which we should include within the scope of a post-implementation project. Also, once a post-implementation review has started, out of that review and out of the engagement that that team does with users, investors, preparers, they may identify some areas where they could benefit from further empirical analysis. Yeah. And another interesting point is that, in fact, we could say, like you have a post-implementation review of a standard, you have also a post-implementation review of the taxonomy. Like, it would be a good opportunity to ask preparers and investors to say, look, did this standard meet the expectation as was set out, but also what you see if you were to prepare or if you were to use an electronic tax report, does the taxonomy meet your expectations as well? I know this would be a complete new trial. We don't know what will be the fine details of it, but we see this as three major benefits we can gain. Another thing is we can continue to focus our approach on activities. And there are definitely still some benefits to be gained, because although the number of elements we typically identify for a common practice project for activities is low, the significance of these elements can be really huge to that particular activity. And if that particular element was not in our taxonomy, a significant information loss will occur to the investors or the preparers. Like Finn's good examples is for the media industry, were identified as potential common practice programming assets. Now, programming assets was always on the face of the primary financial statements, and a significant percentage of the total assets was relating to programming assets. So you can imagine that if we were an electronic digital report and we didn't quote this, we would have some problems. Sorry, Grace.
Yes, I'm sorry. I forgotten to log into the computer.
Not to worry. Technology is not always easy to use, although we try to say it all the time. It is really. Now, Grace, on your slides, I came up to slide 8, activities.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe. Yes. If you would continue from slide 9, from the benefits and the cons from a general approach versus a focused approach. Thank you very much.
Okay. Whichever approach that we are going to choose, there are some pros and cons for either a general approach or a focused approach. And if we are going to take offer a general approach, we can use the same set of samples to cover all items and standards, but it is not always useful to use a general approach in some cases. And actually, while we perform the activity specific reviews, we review over all items in the financial statements and notes. And on the other hand, if we take a focused approach, it seems that we can be more timely, react to new standards and other emerging issues. And it is easier to engage investors and preparers, and it's likely to be more effective. But there is a risk that we may be digging into too much details, while the general elements are already sufficient for reporting purposes. No matter we are going to take the general approach or the focused approach, we would like to increase our collaboration with regulators and also taxonomy standard setters. And one of the possibilities is to compare the extensions developed by local jurisdictions, but English versions of the local taxonomies might not always be available, and local taxonomy developed may not be of the same version as of IFRS, and we may not have the enough resources to undertake the analysis. We welcome your suggestions on how we can increase our collaboration with external organizations. And apart from the regulators and standard setters, we also seen some reports from ASMA and from CFA institution about the financial reporting. But these reports are more focused on the improvement need for better practice instead of identifying common practice of the existing disclosure. So we are not sure how much these reports can help in our common practice project. And taking into consideration of all of the above, we suggest for the 2015-16 common practice project that we should divide our resources into activity-specific analysis and also the integrated post-implementation reviews. And assuming we have the same resources as we have in 2014, we may be able to undertake an analysis for two additional activities and also one post-implementation reviews. And additionally, we, as what I have mentioned before, we would seek other ways to increase our collaboration with regulators and standard setters. And here's our questions to the ITCG. Do you agree that we should undertake a new common practice project in 2015? And if you do, do you agree with our proposals as regards the scope of the project? And are there any other approach that we should consider?
Okay. So any comments, any suggestions?
Well, it's Doug Niven from Australia. I certainly agree that you should undertake another practice project in 2015. As a regulator, it's very important to us that there are common practice extensions developed by the IASB. We prefer not to develop our own, the risk that we end up with inconsistencies across jurisdictions, but also, I think to some extent, we need to be moving into the standard space in doing that. So, and I think some of the areas you suggested are going to be quite useful. For example, agriculture, probably being in Australia around agriculture as being an area, probably less concerned about transport, I'd have to say, but I think it's a good initiative and should be continued. And I like your approach of continuing to focus on specific areas. I note the comment about more general approach at some stage, and maybe that's something can be thought about down the track, but I think at the moment there's enough scope in specific areas, and you're right, areas like agriculture and so forth may actually have a significant number of extensions not actually having worked through it properly, so I think it'll be quite valuable.
Madhu from Irish, India. We should continue with the common practice project in 2015 as well. And maybe we could look at a combination of the focused approach and the external party approach. Focused approach, is a good way to go forward. And maybe we can combine that with looking at some of the regulators who have extended the IFRS taxonomy for certain jurisdictions and see what they have done for some specific industries, such as, say, mining or for finance. So that could be useful as well. So a combination of the approaches 2 and 3 is something, we feel could make sense. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? What about, because I've heard activities, I've heard looking at other taxonomies. What do you think about integrating and coordinating a common practice review with a post-implementation review? What do you have any particular view? Does anyone have any particular views on that? Lewis, is that something you have done at FASB or have given some thoughts at the FASB?
It's Doug Niven from Australia again. Look, I think the idea of doing it in conjunction with the post-implementation reviews is a good idea. For what it's worth, just backtracking to IS7, I like the idea of trialling exposure draft with the actual taxonomy items in it, and we'll be commenting that we support that process. Similarly with post-implementation reviews, while you can't preempt what changes the standards might occur, I think it is a good opportunity to have a look at the taxonomy as well and confirm that as part of the process. And I don't have a fixed view as to whether you should expose as a part of that process, because you don't, in a sense, do that in post-implementation reviews, but the taxonomy elements. But I think it is a good opportunity. And I know, while you say the ISB hasn't approved as yet business combinations, although for other reasons we actually think that's a very important one to focus on, it does make sense to cover it with IFRS 12 and 13 as well. I think they're probably good ones to cover, so certainly I'd encourage that, and particularly as you say, you've gone through a large number of listed entities anyway, sort of on an industry basis. I think it's a good opportunity to bring the processes together.
Patrick?
This is Pat Finnegan. I'm not a member of the ITCG, however, putting my hat on as an old auditor, and thinking about the value to somebody in the state of preparation business, I would think it would be very useful if I were to pick up the red books or the blue books or the green books, particularly the red and the blue books, and find at the end or somewhere after every standard the list of common practice disclosures associated with that subject, that specific disclosure area. So packaging the XBRL changes with the actual changes to amendments, I think, fits hand in glove with that. But down the road, if I think down the road across, the 40 or 50 whatever IFRS statements there are, if I were to go and wanted to know what are the common practice with respect to IFRS 7 or IFRS 11 or IFRS 9, I'll go right to that red book and to the back a specific section that's entitled common practice, and I can find it. So a specific approach in my mind works well to find stuff. But that's from the prepare
have left the conference.
The auditor's perspective. If you're an investor though, I would think they potentially would take a different look or perspective on this whole area. So the question is, who's your audience, and who do you want to, whose needs are you trying to address?
And I agree there, Patrick, because I would say, for instance, from an investor's approach, like having to focus on activities to identify those items that are very critical and very activity-specific, is really, really important, really, because we can't have saying, look, you have a taxonomy to tag IFRS financial statements of media industry, and you don't have programming assets or broadcasting rights or things like that. Something is not correct. But I think, and I'm not sure if Thomas Egan has joined the call, but Thomas has already raised in the past as well, look, there's a danger with common practice that you go too much in the detail without looking at the overarching structure, and an investor would like to see the structure as well before they go in the detail. So we need to find and strike a fine balance as well. And I think we have definitely some connection problems today, because it seems to be quite a few people who have not been able to join. So I apologize for that. Yeah.
Rita, this Lewis. You posed, my phone was on mute earlier. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yes, we can.
You posed a question to me. Would you mind repeating it if you remember what you asked?
Yes, I remember, Lewis, because like Vince's, for us, it would be the first time that we are considering possibly to synchronize a common practice review with a post-implementation review of a specific standard. So I just wondered if this kind of issues or ideas or approaches were considered at the FASB as well, and any advice you can give us on that, really.
Mm-hmm. Right. So there's two aspects to that. So we have coordinated our extension review or common reporting practice review with the post-implementation review process that's conducted by the FAF. But they have gone in a somewhat different direction in the last couple of years. So there's probably less coordination. There is less coordination there than there had been in the past because there's simply less need for it. But when they pick a project, we do focus on it as well at the same time. Possibly more important is our own post-implementation review process, if we can borrow that term, where when we include something in the taxonomy for a new accounting standard in a subsequent cycle, we will review how filers have implemented it to see if we've gotten it right and to see if we need to include some additional elements to reflect how they are in fact reporting things. And so, you know, you can take something like RevRec when that's, you know, fully deployed. We would come back on that in subsequent periods to see if they've used it the way we anticipated, and we would make adjustments. And so in a practical sense, that has had more, that has more utility for us than, say, a close coordination with the FAST post-implementation review process.
Yeah. That makes sense. And also, I think, Lewis, you have the luxury of having this fast march of US GAAP filings that we only wish we had.
Yes, and it's all in one place, too. Yeah.
Great. Any other comments or suggestions? Or
I do have one other thing, Rita. And I know as a group we've talked about this
not recorded.
Before.
Have joined the conference.
You know, I think looking at common reporting practices is really important. Whether you go general or you go focused, kind of depends on where you are in the process. As you know, we are currently in a focused mode, but when we started, we were in a general mode because we had this onslaught of data, and we really just needed to try and get anything where we could. But I suspect that based on where you are now, focus probably makes the most sense. But the one thing that I think all of us need to think about are, you know, preventative measures as opposed to always going towards, you know, how do we, you know, make sure the taxonomy has full coverage, and instead of, you know, making that the core focus, provide a mechanism so that extensions can be managed in a way that the user is going to know what it is. And that continues to be, you know, an issue for all of us, that we don't have a mechanism that tells the filer how to include an extension in a way that the user of the data will know what it's all about without having to actually go back to the source document.
And as you know, Lewis, we cannot agree more to that.
I know. I'm putting my support there.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Okay. Any other comments?
Rita, Patricia Miles here. I'm just looking at it from, I suppose, the whole idea of engagement by various members who are preparing financial statements, or say, for example, the banking and insurance companies. And I think with, you know, a lot of the regulation that's changing over the next couple of years, the EU implementing various measures such as Solvency II, managing capital would be very much high on the agenda of insurance.
Name not recorded has left the conference.
So I'm looking at the managing capital aspect and the financial risk disclosures aspect because they're, I suppose, key areas that are being focused on by the banking and financial institutions and insurance companies at the moment. But I think both of those would be very relevant to preparers of financial statements, and I'm just thinking a bit more of an uptake by various companies to want to come on board and get involved in common practice.
No, that's a good suggestion. Thanks, Patricia. Any other suggestions? No. And as always,
Sorry. This is the TA. Can I ask you one question about the page 12? Do you have any plan about if you have any plan to increasing you and the collaboration with other regulators in standard sectors?
As you know, we continue to engage with regulators. Like Grace plays a very important role as well. She is doing the IFRS taxonomy jurisdiction profiles. We continue to say we have calls with some regulators, and we continue to say with regulators, look, if you have any particular feedback, if you have any particular business requirements where we can do better. We cannot promise, of course, that we can always implement it, but we definitely want to hear about them. And I think as well, like, because Grace already pointed out that, yes, it definitely is worthwhile to review what are the extensions that regulators make to the IFRS taxonomy, but there is, of course, also incurs some resources. And I think we will not be in a position with the staff levels we have to look at all extensions that regulators do across the globe. So I think it would be very much to say collaboration with regulators, that they say when they look at the IFRS taxonomy, when they extend the IFRS taxonomy, if they feel that particular extensions they do that are have a global or a general significance or importance, please contact us and we can look at it. Like if there are particular extensions that you do, a regulator does, to meet particular local regulatory requirements or local financial reporting requirements, such as, for instance, Sharia reporting in Saudi Arabia, etc., because they just have done a huge extensions, then fine, that's fine. To a certain extent, this has to be a two-way process where we are here to listen to what regulators tell us and to give us advice on areas where they think extensions may be useful, but I don't think we are in a position to individually look at all the extensions regulators are doing. And things like doctors say, look, like agriculture could be a very important area to consider for Australia, that is very useful feedback. Christy?
Yeah, and I just want to add, it's Christy speaking, that in the disclosure initiative more broadly, when we're thinking about developing disclosures, we do consider and try and have discussions with regulators. You know, you mentioned Basel III and Solvency II. You know, we have to have those disclosures in mind when we're also thinking about the way we set disclosures and whether, you know, if there is duplication, is there any way to minimise that duplication? But also recognising that sometimes there's not duplication, they might be similar, but they might have different bases. So in actually developing the standards, I think we do try and work with regulators and understand the current disclosures that are being made.
Great. Any other remarks? No. And as always, if anything comes
have
to your
left the conference.
If anything comes to your mind after the call, just shoot us an email or ask us for that we contact you. And thank you again very much for your input, and thank you board members to attend this call. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.